Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
Good morning and welcome to the Garden Goddess Show on WDRT Radio, 91.9 FM, Viroqua, Wisconsin. This is Donna Smith, and we're going to talk about all things gardening today. My guest on today's show is Daryl Skrupke, a longtime resident of Viroqua. Daryl is an artist and an avid gardener. We'll be talking about hosta, incorporating art into the garden, and a little about starting a garden from the ground up. Let's start off today's show with a couple of questions from the garden cart. If you have a question about something going on in your garden or want some help or advice, you can email me. If you're curious about a garden-related topic that you'd like me to cover in a future show, let me know that too. Send an email with questions or suggestions to gardening@wdrt.org, and I will respond on a future show. Our first question came from a listener who asked, "What is the yellow flowering plant I'm seeing along roadsides and other places? I was told that this was the source of my hay fever." Well, the yellow flowering plant that you're referring to is most likely one of several species of goldenrod, frequently found along disturbed areas like road edges. Goldenrod is not the source of your hay fever, however. Common and giant ragweed are the actual culprits. Ragweed can also be found on disturbed ground as well as in cultivated fields. Ragweed and goldenrod bloom at about the same time. However, ragweed is less visible as its flowers are green and not showy like goldenrod. Therefore, since the yellow flowers of goldenrod are so visible, it usually gets the blame for causing hay fever in children and adults. You can look up pictures of both goldenrod and ragweed online to see the differences, the main one being the upright spikes of green flowers on the ragweed. If you have this plant in your yard, pulling it out before flowering is a good method to control it. The next question has to do with cherry tomatoes. Why are my cherry tomatoes splitting? Splitting or cracking of your tomatoes is more of a watering issue and not related to any type of disease. When soil dries out, the skin tightens. A heavy watering or rainfall will cause the plant to take up excess water. The inside of the fruit expands and you get tomatoes cracking. Here are a few suggestions of things you can do to minimize the splitting. Water your tomatoes evenly. Deep, thorough watering helps the plant take up moisture slowly. In hot weather, you may need to water daily, especially containers. Skipping water for several days and then watering heavily can be a common cause of that splitting. After a heavy rain, wait until at least the top inch of soil feels slightly dry before watering again. You can also try mulching plants to maintain good soil moisture. When picking, look for fruits that are fully colored, firm, and slightly underripe. Ripe and overly ripe fruits are more prone to cracking, especially following a rain or heavy watering. Next time you look at seed catalogs or plant descriptions, look for varieties that have slightly thicker skins and better resistance to splitting. While no tomato is completely crack-proof, a strong, healthy plant will handle changes in moisture levels better than plants that are stressed. I'd like to welcome my guest, Daryl Skrupke from Viroqua. Daryl's been around this area for quite a few years, taught in the Kickapoo schools for about 50 years total, teaching biology, earth science, and various other courses. Welcome to the show today, Daryl.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
So happy to have you here. So we're going to talk today about gardening, which is very related to biology and earth science and all of those things that you taught many, many kids about for so many years. How did you get started gardening in your yard here in Viroqua?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question, and it has an interesting beginning because I was not a gardener, and I'm not a master gardener, but I did teach botany in my biology classes, and I enjoyed plants. But it wasn't until I met my second wife, Mary Bennett, who owned the property that I'm currently on, that the gardening, especially flower gardens, became a hobby, and I became a hostaholic.
Oh, yes. And you have many beautiful hostas, and we'll talk about those in a little bit. So how long have you lived at this property in Viroqua where you're gardening?
Well, I met Mary in August of 91, and we dated for a couple years. But at that time, she was in the process of remodeling the outside of the house. Mm-hmm. And along with that, there was a project next to the adjacent parking lot that was full of box elder, thistle, and some volunteer cedar trees. And it had tumbled up rocks, and it was a mess. And we had talked to Gary Hall about the possibility of making it more pleasing to the eye and taking care of it and starting a garden. And since it's on a slope, it would be more visible. So it became a project that bonded us together through our dating years, and we had a lot of fun at some expense to remove a couple truckloads of big boulders, and I hand-cut down trees that we piled up and had the actual Viroqua Fire Department come to do a controlled burn so we wouldn't scorch the old oak trees up on the rock.
Oh, yeah.
So it took a while, and then Kelly Hoggy was the one that removed some of the boulders, like two truckloads full, and brought in black dirt, and we'd lay down a garden hose and curve it this and that way and try to get a flow that seemed natural, which for the most part is the same contour that we have today there.
Sure. So you started with a lot that wasn't really set up as a garden, and you did all of that initial work to get it started.
Well, you're right. There was no concept of a garden at all. And at the end of the yard, which now has evergreens and a retaining wall in front, was filled with ditch lily, which most people in town know I don't have much fondness for ditch lilies. And finally, I got aggravated enough one day to start digging. And it took like 3 days of digging just to get all the ditch lily out of there.
Right.
And things start gradual, and you work with what you got. And eventually, we hauled in some bigger boulders and some bark and started out with one or two plants. A very humble beginning.
Yeah, and knowing what your garden looks like today, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's really amazing. So how did, you're also an artist, a very good artist, and how has that influenced your gardening? You know, how have the two worked together for you?
Well, landscaping, a lot of times you're limited by what you have to work with. And fortunately, there was a lot on the property to work with, which we've added to recently with some property transfers from the city. But at any rate, there's lots of art in terms of sculptures that I've added, wildlife sculptures primarily, and more rustic. And I've going to different art and craft shows and Spring Green and Madison found sculptures that I thought would look nice in the garden. And so it was just a natural idea to add that to the vegetation and get the colors and the textures and something that people could spy or find. I like to have them partially hidden, but some are bold and rather noticeable.
Right. In one part of your garden, along the side, you've got some fish.
I do.
And then there's, like, you've got sedum and some hostas and some taller plants, and the fish look like they're swimming through the weeds in the water. Like, it was just amazing. I showed those to PJ, my husband, and he just thought that was so cool because it combined the art of these ceramic fish and other metal fish with that's, with all the plants.
That's really interesting because I had no idea that that was going to happen until my wife had one of her close friends make a stained glass for the garden mm-hmm. with a metal circle around it, and it was a muskie getting caught. But the stained glass had the appearance of aquatic plants in the background and even a beaded chain for uh-huh. the leader going to the mouth. And once I saw how that looked in the garden, then I've accumulated many rustic birds and ceramic additions, and mm-hmm. One of my favorite is just a plain sign that says Hosta Gardens, that Daisy, most people in town know of Daisy and her glass work with signage, and I've enjoyed that addition to the garden a lot.
Yeah, there's something to see around every little corner as you walk down a trail or, you know, just in front of a bed, lots and lots of really interesting things to see. You mentioned earlier that you are a hostaholic and you have a lot of hostas. How many different varieties would you say that you have in your garden?
Well, I did keep track for a long time, but then through the years, I really don't remove the vegetation till springtime. And so cleaning in the spring has discarded a lot of the signages that I made labeling plants. Mm-hmm. But the count that I had at one time was approaching 500 species of hosta.
Wow.
But many of those have since, some of them are real specialty plants, mm-hmm. and unfortunately they are gone, and no longer there. So
right.
somewhere at probably between 400 and 450.
Wow. That's
But there
that's
are
quite
many
it.
Other plants too. Like I have a lot of daylily. Mm-hmm. About 85 of those, and Asiatic lilies and other perennials. And that happened because of day trips that we took to arboretums and nurseries, and for some strange reason, the steering wheel just started to shake, and I couldn't get past the arboretum or nursery without turning in. And the standing joke was with my wife, Daryl, I will stop if you do not buy another plant. And so we'd make this deal. And then as soon as she would go to the bathroom, I'd quick buy a plant, pay for it, and get it in the trunk of the car before she came back out. And I know she knew that I did that, but it added a lot to the inventory.
Yes, yes. I worked at an arboretum for many years, and we'd have a plant sale. And then at the end of the plant sale, the staff were always, you know, we're going around buying plants or mm-hmm. or you'd be working in a garden and we'd be dividing or something, and inevitably you're taking things home. And it's so wonderful to see all of the varieties of, like, all of the varieties of the hosta in your garden, or your daylilies or your Asiatic lilies and some of your other plants, because there isn't just one of something in most cases. You know, you have a lot of something that really makes a nice impact.
Well, you can make a statement in a lot of different ways with a few plants or a lot of variety. And I do like the evergreens that we have in the garden. Mm-hmm. And some of them that we bought, which were supposed to be miniatures, have since proven the labeling to be wrong. So again, start out with what you like and find a space to put and work around that. And it becomes or takes on its own life if you just observe. And it takes time, and don't be afraid to move plants from one place to another. That was a classic too. My wife, as soon as I would set the plants out, she would put them where she wanted, and mm-hmm. then when I would get the shovel out and start putting them in the ground, I would move them invariably a few feet this way or that way, and
right.
she would come back out. Mr. Skrupke, did you move those plants? You didn't put them where I wanted them. You dig that one up and put it back. So I would do that because she did have good sense and balance.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, and you mentioned the evergreens that you have in your garden. What other woody plants do you have that kind of give some structure and form to your garden?
Well, that changes through time too, but because I did plant birch trees from my parents' property, and they were small, 6 feet high, and after 30 years became mature and started to die out and eventually did die. So I had them partially cut down. Well, that ended up with some dead stumps that I had tree carved with a former student who learned how to chainsaw tree carve. And since we've added quite a few chainsaw tree sculptured features, such as owls and trees, in numerous places in the yard. So that's rather unique. Also, thinking outside the box, I fell in love with somebody who was a glass blower, very similar to Chihuly glass, but that was Dan and Deb Fenn, who used to live in Hillsboro, now live outside of Waukon, and they do glass blowing. And so one of the unique features that I have in the garden is the glass garden, which I really enjoy, and has a variety of critters in it, from worms and damselflies and frogs and mainly roosters with a lot of character.
Yes, yes. As you know, as I've said before, there's a lot to see in Darrell's garden, and the glass garden is very unique and enjoyable to look at.
It is an eye catcher. One of my favorite trees is the tricolored beech.
I love it.
Offers a brilliance and a shade difference that is not in most gardens. So that combined with evergreens, large and medium and small, and difference in texture, and especially the sculptures, mostly of wildlife, whether they're cement, whether they're metal, whether they're wood, they all are there and tucked in around this or that corner. So it makes it interesting to walk through. It's almost like walking through a forest of planted trees and shrubs and flowering plants. So you have to have your eyes working and be alert to observing, because I do have a lot of hidden features in the garden that add to the experience.
Yes. And you also have the advantage of you have all that rock, and there's a lot of structure that way in your garden. So you've got paths that go, you know, all the way around to the back end of your garden that really is, you know, the average homeowner doesn't have something like that, but you have that nice space.
We do, and it's interesting because that started out very humble, too. The only way I could navigate around there was to walk, twist and turn around this and that, boulder and rock, and it's all natural. There was nothing there that I could move, but I would go at the end of the day when the city was redoing streets and sidewalks and gutters, and ask if I could get the cement that they had left at the end of the day, put it in 5-gallon pails and bring it back home, and carve out niches for steps and then stamp them with hosta leaves. And so through several years of due diligence and other people being aware who donated old retaining wall block and brick, there's a combination of brick and retaining wall block and cement steps that are stamped, but there are upper, middle, lower trails. They intertwine, they interconnect, and everything is so that no matter where you stop, I try to have symmetry in the landscaping, 360 degrees, so you can stop and turn around in a circle, and there's something to view from every vantage point, and that's something that I've been consciously aware of and trying to do.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. So another aspect of people's gardens is wanting to have four-season interest in their garden. So what plants and things do you have in your garden that would be of interest in all four, you know, in each of the four seasons?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm, again, not a master gardener, so I don't have a lot of flowering plants for the fall. I've just, by visiting numerous nurseries and arboretums, like I mentioned before, found plants that I like, and so I don't have that color balance, especially in the fall, but then I'm off to another adventure, which is dear to your heart, and that's fishing.
Yes.
So I don't have a lot for the fall, but the rock outcropping itself and the evergreens offer a contrast in color with the gray rock and the bright green and shades of green and the long needles, short needles. And then some of the sculptures I don't cover, but the wood ones I do in the wintertime to increase their length of survival. In the spring, it's mostly the shades of green with the hosta plants, which show their greatest diversity in color and shapes and textures and colors and streaking in the springtime. And the growth is seemingly inches per day. So every day is an adventure to walk out and notice the changes. And then in summertime, of course, more of the spring flowers are done flowering, and the summer flowers early, middle, late, and fallish early and middle, I do have taken care of till we get into August. So from August to winter is kind of drab in my garden, but again, there are sculptures and there's still a lot of greenery, but things change.
And you have deciduous trees. Do you get much color from the oaks?
Well, the oaks are the brown, and of course, they don't shed their leaves. They don't have an abscission layer, so they get ripped and torn off with weathering and wind and rain and freezing and thawing. But the other trees, deciduous trees, do change color and have an abscission layer, so they fall off. So then you get the branching. Then you can see your apical dominance or whatever the tree might display for branching.
Many of us have annual plants, for instance, in our gardens that need quite a bit of deadheading. Do a lot of your perennials, do you spend much time deadheading those? Do you let all of your hostas flower? Or some people prefer not to have them flower and just enjoy the foliage.
That's a very good question, because different times of the year require different types of deadheading, and one of the most important ones is with the daylily. And again, there are early, middle, late summer daylilies flowering, and I deadhead every day, and I get about a 5-gallon pail full of flower petals each day.
Yeah.
But then when the Asiatic lilies come, one of my most favorite things about the garden is sharing it with people. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I do the bouquet giveaways, and I post that on Facebook. So I give away all kinds of flowering bouquets, and that changes from middle summer to late summer, and that's a great activity. In the springtime, not as much, but in the fall, late, I don't have a lot that's flowering, but the Asiatic lilies are the last, so I do that quite a bit, the bouquets a lot.
Well, we have run out of time. We could certainly do this again, because Daryl has a lot more information, I'm sure, to share.
There are a couple quick things I'd like to mention, and I try to have the garden for people to enjoy and use. So I do lots of garden tours. Most people in town know when the garage door is up, I'm home, and then I do impromptu garden tours all the time. But Kathy Wheeler's fellow painters come in and have painted portraits of people in the backyard. We've hosted senior photos in the backyard. There's a couple possibilities. Chrysanthemum came with their special needs kids to the backyard.
Awesome.
And I'm open to any kind of opportunity for people to enjoy the garden, whether it's a garden tour or some activity. When the next project, the gazebo, gets finished, I hope to have coffee time in the garden and just have people from Wonder State or neighbors come over and use the gazebo and enjoy the garden, have coffee and conversation. So it gets to be more of a kind of community gathering, and I will be open to whoever cares to join.
Okay. How can people get in touch with you, Daryl?
Well, most people, they see me out on the street, talk to me, or they see me at the farmer's market, and I've often invited complete strangers that I meet from the farmer's market to the garden. I kind of get a feel that they can be trustworthy, because there are some sculptures out there that could walk away without feet, so to speak, but people have been very respectful and very appreciative, and most come back and tell me how they enjoyed the garden. But gardens are for sharing and getting enjoyment out of, and you can't do that if the observer is your only self.
Right. So stop by and see Daryl at the Viroqua Farmers Market that's held on Saturday mornings. And you can check out his art there, as well as learn a little bit more about his garden here in Viroqua. And I want to thank you, Daryl, for coming by today. This has been a great 20 minutes that we've had to share together. So, and I'm sure we can come up with some more topics to talk about in the future.
I look forward to that. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming in. There's a lot to do in the garden in the month ahead. Today's Garden Journal suggests the following. Get ready for fall by adding some cool season crops to your veggie garden, such as kale, lettuce, spinach, and onion sets. Growing these in containers will allow you to move them inside and out as the weather changes. Pot up or take cuttings from your herbs and get them established inside so you can have fresh herbs all winter long. Help houseplants get reestablished inside over the next month. Monitor them for insect and disease problems. Put them in the sunniest south or west-facing window for a few weeks, and then put them in a north or east window to help them acclimate to the lower light conditions inside. Early to mid-September is a great time to do some lawn renovation. Put down seed early so it can germinate and establish before winter. September is also the time to put down lawn fertilizer. Use a rate of 1 pound of actual nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. Daryl and I talked about four-season interest in the garden today. If your garden lacks color in the fall, think about adding a few of these shrubs to your garden to spruce up the look of your fall garden. Serviceberry, aronia, sumac, witch hazel, viburnums, or fothergilla have great fall color. As I wrap up today's show, I'd like to say thank you to my guest, Daryl Skrupke, for joining me today, and thank you so much for listening to this month's program. Please join me again next month for another discussion about gardening and plants. Let me leave you with another song for the garden playlist. This one is by one of my favorite groups, Fleetwood Mac, and the song is called Dreams. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Let's go out and make our world a little more beautiful, one plant at a time.